हरिः ओम् सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Summing up some of the points from yesterday, seeing that we only went through three verses, was that basically is that in the study of this as devotees, then we look at it from three different levels. Right? Means the non-devotees basically only look at it from one level. But the devotees will look at it from three. The first level is what we're actually conscious of. What we're conscious of, what are our values, what we've actually made our determination to do. The second level is what we're not conscious of. You know, so in training then we're made aware of that, but if we are performing our duties properly, still there's a second level that's there of particular, you know, habits or different things that there that may be good or may not be good. But they're based actually on our determination, but we're not conscious of them. They just happen because they happen, right? By habit. And that goes deeper, because the first level is what you've particularly noted. The second level will be basically what's coming from previous lives, like that. The first level would be what you're conscious of, means what you, in your experience in this life, have therefore decided on what is your value system and what is how you're going to move forward in life, how you're going to apply your life, you know. The second is what is comes from last life, what is coming through. And that will also be very much influenced by your conscious. Your conscious level is the most powerful of the three in, as far as change. The other two are just the way they are. So if the determination is very serious to do something, either something positive or get rid of something negative, then that will start to have influence on the other two. But otherwise, if one is, you know, how you'd say, you know, just the inherent nature, how you deal in different situations, how you, what are your basic kind of like, you know, if you're, you like being with others, you like being alone, or, you know, if whatever it is the kind of situation of what kind of facilities, more or less, or these kind of things, much of that is just underlying, right? That's unconscious. Then the third level, and that's it's actually pretty similar to the second level, I mean the first level, in that you're dealing basically with the same thing. It's just a matter of being aware of underlying things in our nature, in our consciousness, that we may not be aware of. But the third level, that's where it gets a little tricky, because the third level is the primordial difficulty, anartas. Right? That is what we've come into the material world with. Right? We're only here because of those. Those are the original, or what you call the, what do you call it? The
original.
Yes, the original sin. Means of wanting to be the controller, wanting to be the enjoyer. So every conditioned soul in the material world has this. So the thing is that is what ultimately has to be gotten to. Right? Does that make some sense? Because the controller means I am God rather than Krishna. Right? It should be I am servant, not controller. But we see Krishna enjoying, and we think, hey, that looks pretty good. I could get into that. And so then we decide that this is what we want to do. So then that pollutes the conscience from that envy. That's the envy that Prabhupada talks about. that the original problem is we become envious of Krishna because we decide, I would like to enjoy like that. Then from that aspect, then you get, means you want to control, you are God, you're the enjoyer, so therefore you have to control. I am God rather than the servant. Right? Does that make some sense? So that creates these two. I am the controller, I am God, and as God, I am the enjoyer. Rather than I am the servant and I am the enjoyed. So that's the difficulty. So one always has to see that in the conversation we may move through these. Right? Sometimes we'll be talking about directly is what is a good quality, what is here, why we do it. Sometimes we talk about what's underlying that. It may be moving in one level, but there's something underneath that that may be compatible, may be contradictory. Then we have what's right on the bottom, which is the foundation of the whole thing, is just this material, this material desire that's there. And so that sometimes we also touch on. So it means... If you one's aware of that, then one will notice when we're talking on the different levels, because we move through these sometimes. So sometimes I don't know if they get. It shouldn't be mistaken that when we're talking about the third level, that we're applying that to the first. I mean that's the practical. You know what I'm saying? Does that make some sense? Because let's say we're doing something very sincerely, right? Because we should be doing it. But at the same time, underlying that is we're maybe doing that because that will give us a good result. Right? But underlying that is I want a good result because then I will enjoy. You see that? But the Dharma Shastras basically attend to the first level, because if you're doing what's proper, if you continue, you stick to that, then because you have to control your mind to do that. It's not that you do it one day, 2 days. Dharma Shastras means you do it your whole life. So maybe there'll be an enthusiasm and all that, and you could do it for some days, weeks, months, even few years. But to continue it whole life means you actually have to commit yourself to it. So that will then start to purify the second and third level. Right? That long-term commitment. Like that. Because mode of goodness is long-term. Passion is you're just trying to get some fame from it. You know, I do this, and everybody will say, yes, I'm a very nice devotee. You know, culture, these things like this. But that's passion. And once you get that acclaim, it may be dropped. You know? But if it's a matter of that's the goodness, that's the level that we're working at, then it will keep going because you're doing it because it's what should be done. Right? Or higher than that is we're doing it because it pleases Krishna. That's why it should be done. Right? Means you can look at it from it should be done because that's what the scriptures say. Right? And then you can give all kinds of economic, sensual, and aspects of liberation that you'll get benefit from by doing it. So, yes, it's very beneficial. So, it's a matter of this should be done, so this is what we're doing. But then, why it should be done is because that's what pleases Krishna. Right? The decision on what should be done and what shouldn't be done is that it pleases Krishna or not. That's the actual thing. So then when they ask, okay, let's say you have a karmakandi, what they do may not be pleasing to Krishna. But someone who is a karmakandi, who is not interested in Krishna, but only interested in enjoying the material world, then Krishna will, okay, you want to be like that, so then you please me by being a good karmakandi. You do karmakanda properly, then it's indirect pleasure for Krishna. Therefore, they're getting a good result. They're going to heavenly planets because indirectly they please Krishna through the demigods and through, you know, proper austerity and all that. Does that make sense? So still, Krishna's pleasure is the only way anybody's getting any good benefit. But in devotion, it's direct. Therefore, the result takes you back to Godhead. While the indirect means it only takes you to the heavenly planets or up to the Brahman. Right? These are the karma and jnana. Does that make some sense? So when we deal, then these different levels will be touched at. So then it's sometimes, you know, if it doesn't seem clear, then, you know, then then it should be, you should ask. You know, so it could be, because sometimes one is down there, but it's not what's conscious. You know what I'm saying? It means the beginning of Manu, it says nobody does anything unless there's going to be a result. It says there's never heard of anybody doing anything unless a result who is result-oriented. So if you're doing something that's result-oriented but is pious, then it's considered virtuous. But does that make sense? Because people only do something for a result. So therefore, if it's done and it's pious, then that's good. Now, in the pious, then you can say that there's passion and there's goodness. You want the result and enjoy it, that's fair. You want to do it because you're supposed to do it, then that's higher than that, that's goodness. You want to do it because it pleases Krishna, that's pure goodness. Right? So the same virtue is there. So your result you want is Krishna's pleasure. Or the result you want is that you've done your job properly, and you know you've done your duty. So the result is you want to feel the satisfaction of having done it properly. Or the result is that you want the fruit of aspect of it. But the point is result orientation is there. So in that, when it's the devotion, then it's good. But even if we take the second level, the mode of goodness, that they do it just because they should do it and it's good to do it and that's nice, still there is some recognition for that. You'll deal in the society on a certain level. You'll move with a certain level of society who also has that attitude. You'll feel comfortable. It's your scene. It's your particular taste. Does that make sense? So it still has an element of that self-centeredness. Like that. That's why Prabhupada always mentions that this is what we use, but it can't be the goal. Varnashram for us is a tool, it's not our goal. Perfection of Varnashram is pleasing Krishna, not perfecting the rules. Right? That doesn't mean we don't perfect the rules, because we're trying to perfect the rules to please Krishna. That's the point. So there's always a thing, if someone has some certain power, but there's something to counterbalance that. That's the thing. The Vedic system, everything has its counterbalance. Like that. It means a dependent is dependent, but then they have to be taken care of. You know? Or the Brahmins are the top, but they actually don't control it. The Kshatriyas control it, but they have to listen to the Brahmins. Does that make sense? You always have this control. Like that.
So then,
you know, it's like Shudra doesn't have to worry about taking responsibility, but they have to do what they're told, because the other person will take the responsibility. Does that make sense? Something goes wrong, it's the person who's responsible's fault, not the assistant. Like that. That's why, like, let's say somebody comes as a messenger. Then the rule is that the messenger can come and say the message exactly as he was told to say it. And it may be insulting, it may be this and that, but you can't do anything to the messenger, because he's just coming and he's the messenger. So cultured kings won't say anything, but they understand the exact mood of the other king. You know, and he'll come, he'll be respected, you know, he'll be honored, you know, because generally the Brahmins are the messengers. And he'll be taken care of and given all facility, even though he's just come and given, you know, some really insulting message from another king. But it's the king. He's just the messenger. So you have all these checks and balances in this way. But those things are done by Krishna, because then it balances the whole thing. Because you can't overdo something where then the whole aspect gets thrown off. It means the dharma, artha, kama, and moksha can't disturb each other, that they each can't function. And those shouldn't be so prominent that bhakti can't function. Does that make some sense? So the balance is there, and only Krishna knows that balance. Only he knows how the whole thing works. Therefore, we turn to the scriptures. Does that make some sense? Another aspect, just to take this to a point, is we were discussing, I think it was we were discussing yesterday, last class, is that there's only, actually, technically, only the path of bhakti. Those who recognize it's the path of bhakti get bhakti from it. Those who don't recognize it's the path of bhakti then only go as far as karma or jnana. They only see the path as something to get them there. Like the bus is going all the way to Calcutta, but the person only sees that it goes to Ranagat or Shantipur. They could go to Calcutta, but they get off because that's all they want to get from it. So they don't call it the Calcutta bus. They'll call it the Shantipur bus. They'll call it the Ranagat bus. Does that make some sense? So this is all part of that path, but some of the things are for those who are going to get off a little earlier. You know? So, but it's written in a language that the karmis and jnanis will be pleased with it. They'll identify with it. But at the same time as knowing the language, the devotees can take it beyond. They, you know, say, you'll reach the highest destination. Right? For the karmakandi, that means, oh, I'll go to Indra's planet. Like this. For the impersonalist means I'll get to the Brahman. For the devotee means I will get to whatever is the destination, means the spiritual world, and within that which one he wants to go to. Like for us, then we'll say that means Vrindavan, because that's the highest. Like that. Like that. Yeah. Or he'll be freed from misery. So then for that means I go to the heavenly planets, I enjoy. I get liberation, then I'm free from misery, or I'm freed from material consciousness, and I go to the spiritual world. So all these different things are... So it's written in a language that they'll all... Otherwise they wouldn't follow it. If this was just presented as Bhagavatam, just in that way, then you'd find there'd be a few people, sincere people following, and everybody else wouldn't bother at all. Like that, because it's just not what they want. They have to be able to see that, yes, I can get to Shantipur here. You know, like that. You know, they have to be convinced that that's what they're going to get. And you also have to inspire them that it's worth going to Shantipur. It's a great place. You know, it's nice. You know, Ganga's moved a mile away, you know, because people are so, you know, how you say, insulting. And, you know, so it's great.
So Maharaj, does this mean that in our study of mind we'll then go to three levels, and that the first level could be an overview, the second level could be Siddhanta, and the third level could be
That's another way, yeah, but in what I was mentioning before, those three, no, because this was going a little bit before. This would be, the first would be, well, technically speaking, is that that I was taking it from the Dharmashastra down. Then you have above that also. You would have, what is the purpose of that? What does that give you? But that will be connected to what it does on the second and third level. Right? In other words, you have the Dharmashastra itself. Right? It means the rule itself. This is how it's applied. Now that has actually a purpose behind it. So that would be one up from that. But what that's doing is establishing actually the one below it, what I was talking about. Does that make sense? The subconscious. The purpose is actually establishing the subconscious. It also sometimes establishes just, you know, just social interaction, economics, these kind of things. But since the ultimate purpose of the Dharmashastra is to get you back to Godhead, then it's starting to work on that. Then when you get to the actual really cutting edge of the thing of the philosophy and all that, that is dealing with what's the primordial. Right? In other words, it's just a reflection. Is what's dealing directly with the spiritual is what will be dealing with how you left the spiritual. Because if you deal with spiritual, why we're not there? So then that reflects down to here. Then you come down to actually how does that elevate you? It elevates you because it actually transforms your subconscious. And then there's the rule itself and how you perform it so that you get the proper social interaction and economics and all these different things. Does that make some sense? So that's, I was just thinking is that sometimes the other two are confusing. But so you're dealing with like, actually I guess, okay, five levels. Okay. Okay. Another thing that should be understood is that we're devotees. And devotees, it's simply we're trying to find out what is the best way to situate ourselves in the devotional service and engage ourselves. So in that, then we take where we are today and move forward. This is a very important principle. Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes this point, is that someone who says that to move forward we have to go back to the beginning, wipe out everything, this is all bogus, and go back, then we can start the path. Because we've gone on the wrong path in the wrong direction, so therefore all that, we have to trace our steps right back and then start all over again. He says, no, from wherever you are, then you see the goal. Right? The closest distance between two points is a straight line. Right? So, if we're not exactly in the ideal situation, we take wherever we are in that not ideal situation and aim at Krishna and move forward. That's the mode of goodness. Mode of passion, mode of ignorance, then we lament about it, then we get all caught up in it. No, it's just a matter, this is where we're at, this is what we have to do. So, therefore, in going through this, this is ideal. Some of us may be able to follow it, some of us may be able to come close to it, some of us try our best. The point is that we're trying to do, attain to the principle that is trying to teach us. Because that's what's of value. Right? Does that make sense? It's not spoken about so much, because if you talk that, the tendency is to drop the externals. But being conditioned, we can't drop the externals. So you have to put it in proportion. What is better, what is worse? What is the more ideal, what's the less ideal? Does this make sense? So we shouldn't worry if some of these things haven't been our past history. Right? This is a very important point. You know? Like that. Otherwise, then it may be a disturbance. You know, if things are ideal, nice. But if they're not, you know, and especially if one's coming from the Western backgrounds or like this, it's not necessarily, you know, how you say, a pretty picture, right? You know, it's like the past is not great like that. So, but we should see is this is what is we're trying to aim for in our situation now. We can learn from the past, but don't dwell in the past. Does that make sense? Like here, you know, it says, okay, let us just take a practical point of, you know, marrying the first boy means the first boy you contact is the one you marry. Right? That's the principle. So then, in the modern culture, that's not necessarily standard or even encouraged. I myself have even heard senior devotees, you know, or at least they consider themselves that way, not senior spiritual, but senior social devotees say, it's important that boys and girls mix together and get to know each other, otherwise they won't know how to, you know, live together as adults and all this and that. You know, it's nice, it's their opinion. God created it a different way. But, you know, that's the wonderfulness of the material creation is that each living entity is entitled to his own opinion. You know, it doesn't mean it'll work that way, but like that. So, therefore, we might not find that ideal. And because of that, then technically, even though there may not have been marriage, by Gandharva rites, there is marriage. Or, technically, there could have been marriage. So we might find, as we've been through so many of these and this and that, and you know, so this kind of thing is, we shouldn't be worried about it. We should be know that where we are today, what is the ideal, and move forward. What to be learned. So then what is there of the past, if there's something to learn from it, that yes, okay, we were doing all these things, and we can see how it wasn't good, how it's affected our consciousness, how it's affected our mood. You know, how it's actually affected our social ability to function with others, you know, or with individuals. And then learn from that and understand, yes, I shouldn't do this. I'll do my best. And then the next generations can do better. Because it's understood. Prabhupada said the third generation is the one that will be special. Like that. So that's understood. That's already, accepted that. Means the first generation's children, they'll do pretty good, but their children will be the ones that will be able to come close to this. Does that make some sense? So if you have first generation trying their best, then their children, trying their best, their children will be the ones that will be able to do it. But the point is the perfection of Varnashram is not our purpose. It's going back to Godhead. So it's used as a medium as for devotional service. So, therefore, in our sincerity, we try to do our best because it's for Krishna's pleasure. We don't say, oh, I can't do, so we just leave it. Otherwise, then what do you do for Krishna? Right? You have to do something. So that's the whole point. So that's what matters to Krishna, is that endeavor. That's what's important to Krishna. That your endeavor to do your best to please him, that is there. So since he's given this as the social system, then we endeavor to do what we can best in the situation we're in. Right? We bring it as close to ideal as possible. Like that. And then what's not there, we have to understand either how it's connected, or how you say, by using higher principles, or you know, that we're progressively trying to work towards that as opportunities open. Right? Like, let's say you have a Brahmin, he's doing business. Okay. It's not ideal, but there's not another option. But if an option comes where he could do brahminical activities and not do business, then it should be taken. To just say, we don't care, then that's considered fallen. The Brahmin doing business is not considered fallen if he has no other option. As soon as the option is there, it's a viable option, he doesn't take it, then he becomes what's called bratya. Then he's outcast. So it all works on the sincerity. And it's practical. It's understood. Things don't work right. You're in the material world. So therefore, then all kinds of rules are given just for that purpose. But it's understood as that's based on the principles that you want to do what is proper. Therefore, if the opportunity is there, you'll make that endeavor. And if not, then, you know, if it's not there, then you'll do your best. Does that make some sense? Because it means, unless it's been done completely wrong, but otherwise everything has something of use to it. So then one can move forward. So that's the point, is something is gained like that. Like I've seen, you know, it's not ideal, but I've seen God sisters, you know, married for the third time. The third time works. They finally figured out, you know, how to behave like a woman and what is a man and what are the duties and how it works. And okay, they're 50 years old, but they finally figured it out. So then their mind's peaceful, they're able to chant their rounds, they're able to attend the temple and that, but before that they weren't. Because they were so caught up in making money and doing their thing to please themselves, and they don't know how to please themselves and trying this and that, so many material alternatives, that finally after so many, they figure it out and it works. A little late, the Vedas are trying to teach you that you don't have to, you know, you shouldn't have to figure it out at 50. You should be figuring it out, you know, when you're 12. You know? Like that. That's the difference. It's just how to get ahead. But the point is it should be gotten together at some point. Right? You know, that's the point. Then that's sincere. But otherwise, if it's never gotten together, you know, make a philosophy that, you know, no one can get it together, you know, this is all 5,000 years ago, like that. No, there's people following this today. Exactly every rule that's mentioned here, there are people today that are following it to the letter, with no problem. It's just for them, like breathing. It's like there were some devotees were in India, and they were making some comment about some Brahmins. You know, because devotees were always, you know, because we're they're not, you know, they're not. Prabhupada says, no, they're real Brahmins. You have to understand, there are real Brahmins in India. You know, they may not be devotees, but they're Brahmins. There's no question of that. So that kind of thing sometimes that would go. So when devotees would develop that attitude, That's when Prabhupada would say, well, with that attitude, then yes, according to Manasamhita, people with that attitude are non-Aryans. Right? Because that's one of the first things, is that kind of attitude. So that attitude is non-Aryan, so according to that, you're non-Aryan, so you shouldn't study the mana. Only Aryans can study it. So then he would always bring in that balance. Is that, no, these things are going on. It's real. It's happening. Myself, whatever's going on in here, except certain things that do go with other ages, I've seen them all. Just in my years of being here in India. And I know I can go to houses today and see them. Like that. You have to know where to look. You know, if you want to look for gold, you can't look around in the street. You know, you go in the right shop, and there's five floors of gold. You know, but if you check out in the street and look around, you'll find no gold. Yeah, no gold out here. You know? But you know, you know where to look, then you'll find more gold than you know to do it. So that's the thing, is that those who are cultured, you don't see out on the street like that. They move in their own circles. You know, it's just like you walk down the street. You can walk down the street in L.A., New York. Very rare you see a celebrity. You go to some program, Academy Awards, you'll only see celebrities. So they're all out there. But they move in their own world. So that's the thing, is that those who follow this culture, there's millions of them. But they move in their own circle. They don't move in the common circle. So that's the thing. That was the whole point of the life membership and these things, is devotees then had access to get into that circle. And in the beginning, that was where the access was. The top, most richest, wealthiest, powerful, cultured people were the people that the devotees were moving with. You know, because the point was is to bring them in, get them interested, and then they will do so much. Right? Like that. Does that make some sense? Like that. Okay. We did 156, no? Okay. It's 157. Okay, so this is while she means it applies, anything that applies when the husband's alive also applies when he's dead. But there is a distinction made. Now at 57, now we're talking, now if the man's not there. At her pleasure, let her emaciate her body by living on pure flowers, roots, and fruits. But she must never even mention the name of another man after her husband has died. So she always just keeps the mind focused. At her pleasure, meaning that as she likes. Because if that natural attachment is there, then if the husband's not there, then there's not so much interest in life. So then they just kind of drop everything. They're not worried about looking good, not worried about eating good, worried about doing anything like that. So it's just natural. So at her pleasure, let it go as far as she likes. She wants to, you know, to be very austere, like we see Vishnu Priya. She would chant one round and then move one grain of rice. And how many rounds? That much rice she would cook. Or, you know, or less, you know, depending upon if she's with the family, how much family she's with, you know, others like that. You know, if she's alone, it's one thing. If she's with other family, it may be another consideration. So that's not a problem, but it mentions pure flowers, roots, fruits. It means, in other words, pure food. She should not get into things that are too passionate, because then passion will create desire, and then it will be very difficult for her, because she can't fulfill that desire. So she should be very careful to be simple in her eating. Then it will help focus the mind. And she shouldn't mention the name of another. It means she wouldn't put her attention on someone else like that. That would be the best principle. She can do that. That is best. Like that. You know, like that. If something's happened where it's not best, then that's another thing. But then from there, then she'd take it that this is it. You know, it shouldn't be that it can just continue. Something's happened. Okay. But then it shouldn't continue. Right? Like that. Because it's always considered, yeah. Until death, okay. Until death, let her be patient of hardships, self-controlled and chaste, and strive to fulfill that most excellent duty which is prescribed for wives who have one husband only. So that's the standard, is one husband, if that can be, that is the principle, because that means the focus, because what we're trying to do is get to one husband only, meaning Krishna. It can't be Krishna and my house and my dog and my Porsche and my, you know, it's got to be Krishna. You know, like that. There should be how do you say? That's what we're trying to get. So the thing is in household life, there's manifold desires, but what holds it together is the husband. Does that make some sense? It means in the spiritual world, there's so much opulence that the focus is on Krishna, not actually on the opulence. So the opulence is all part of serving Krishna. So the opulence in the house is all part of serving the husband, taking care of the family, all these different things. So a woman can live in her realm of attachment, but it's focused on higher purpose. Right? The problem is not the attachment, right? Spiritual world, rag bhakti means attachment. So attachment is not the problem, it's what you're attached to and why. Right? That's the question. So the realm of attachment then is okay, but to see that it's all engaged properly, that it's not just self-centered, it has a higher purpose, it's progressive, it's taking you back to Godhead. Then it doesn't matter. Then the attachment can be as expansive or not as you can take care. But attachment should stop at what comes. You can't be attached to what you can't get. Right? That's the Ishavasya Midam Sarva. Means everyone has their quota. What quota you get from your work, be satisfied, because that's all you're going to get. So you might as well be satisfied, right? You're trying to get something to be happy. So you've gotten something, be happy. If you're not happy, then you're foolish, because you only deserve that much. You're not going to get more. So you can be unhappy all you like, doesn't mean it's going to change it, right? So you might as well be satisfied. Does that make sense? Like that. So the whole point is you're trying to create this focus where it's on one source. Like that. And this is divinely attachment. Man will deal with detachment. So the control of the senses, the things like this, like these kind of things. I hear it says be chaste. Self-control means she behaves herself. But it doesn't say sense-controlled. It says self-controlled. Does that make sense? It means the women use their senses much more. For them, sensuality is just part of the experience, part of the dealings. You know, the fine clothes, fine food, fine smells, fine these things. Just the fineness of it is sensual. But it's all part of the scene. You know, it's the environment. But put the man in that environment, and then it becomes sensual to, and that's outside his realm. It brings him down. Does that make some sense? Because when you move in the intellect, then if you switch it to the senses, which are connected, but then the intelligence doesn't function so well. But for the women, the intelligence, the emotions, the senses can all function at the same time. So it's a different thing. That's why it says self-control, not sense-control. Right? It means the senses are engaged. Right? That's not the problem. But it has to be self-control that is proper, and the senses are engaged how they should be engaged. But the man should be sense-controlled in that he's trying to keep the senses in control and not get too involved in the sensuality of women. Right? Because their field is sensual. He shouldn't get too involved. Only how much he needs to get involved. What is his duties to get involved? What are the proper relationships in that? Get involved. Otherwise, more than that, then it will bring him to another platform. Yeah? You want to say something?
I wanted to ask about that, what you said, that you have sensual woman, which is nicely perfumed, and you are connecting her with the man who has to be self-controlled and also do this.
It depends. If he's sense controlled, that's why the woman connects herself to someone who's sense controlled. Because otherwise, if you really think about it, when men start to get sensual, the women kind of find it strange. right? It's not because means it's it, there's something wrong about it, because there it comes into it an element of control that is not wanted, or an element of enjoying that's not wanted. Well, for the woman, it's just her field. You know what I'm saying? She just moves in these things naturally. So then a man who comes into that scene, he has to be sense-controlled to be able to function in that naturally and not be distracted by it. So that's why then the whole principle is that this training must be there for both, so that the woman is moving in the realm of sensuality that is proper. She should be able, she should herself also has to be able to tell the difference between sensuality and sexuality. Generally women, technically you can take it that it's all just sensuality, even sexuality. But there comes a point where it's obvious that there is, within sensuality, a distinction. And the tendency is men will take the whole scene of sensuality would be sexuality. So knowing this, then the woman knows how much is within the realm of refined sensuality and how much actually goes into the realm of sexuality. And if she knows that, then things will work properly. So that requires training. She has to know what to do, what movements, what energies, all these things. She doesn't know that. Then one is she doesn't know herself. And two, she'll have trouble being with others because she'll constantly be getting all kinds of attention and this and that she doesn't want, because she doesn't know that she's putting out the energies to attract it. So that's the means this idea that, you know, women walk around half dressed and that's their right, and what's the men's business, they, you know, why they should get bent out of shape, you know. But it's they don't understand how the modes of nature work. Right? Does that make some sense? So that's the thing, is that it's there, it's available, so then man is a controller, so therefore he wants to control that and enjoy it. Right. And so, since they're dealing at the rougher ends of basically sexuality, then the men also are dealing at, they're not dealing in a refined way. It's also rough, and then the women think, hey, what's this? And those women who are careful about it, and it's controlled, then the men that they move with are also controlled. So that's the point. It's rasa. It means as one person does, it attracts the other. So if one works at a refined level, it'll attract refined people. One works at a gross level, it'll attract gross people. So then one has to see that one is the person that you're dealing with, what is the level of their sense control, and know what takes things too far, too less. You know what I'm saying? Like you're saying, nicely perfumed. If that nicely perfumed, it's just the man either doesn't notice, you know, so you like the smell and your friends think it's great, you know, then doesn't matter. If they have that tendency, nature, that they can appreciate fine smells, they'll appreciate it. But if it creates sensuality in the man, then one has to try to find a balance. Like that. Or if you find, okay, it's fine for your man, but it also attracts a whole bunch of other men, then one might put on a little less. You know, you don't have to be smelled from, you know, 20 feet, you know. Like that. So one has to find what works. You have to know what you're getting into, and you have to know what you want from it. Right? So then deciding that, then you decide how you're going to dress, how you're going to act, you know, all these different things. You know what I'm saying? If you're sitting and you're talking because you're relaxed and you feel comfortable with them, and because of that you're not watching your cloth, and because of that your chest is hanging out, and because of that you see he's getting agitated, and you don't want that, then you cover your chest. Does that make some sense? So you see these kind of things. If it doesn't, then don't worry about it. You know what I'm saying? If they're so simple that they don't mind, and others, it doesn't matter. Like you go to the villages, like I see, like in Rajasthan, I think. The villagers in Rajasthan. Like that. The head has to be covered. But the trolley can be completely hanging out, and those trolleys they wear are like, you know. Yeah, yeah. They have three forms. It's either it's cut down, so you see the top. It means you'll never see the nipples. That's always the rule. That is the point of freak out. All right? So it'll be down to there, or it will be cut out in the middle. It means that it'll be a full top, full bottom, but cut in the middle so that you'll see the middle portion. Or they'll be cut from the bottom where you'll see the bottom half. Like that. And that's what those gypsy women, all them, they all wear. But their head is covered. And if they didn't have their head covered, they'd be called, improperly dressed. So it's just the nature there. So they don't care. Or you have some of them where they're just so simple, they just don't dress that nicely. And the men don't dress that nicely, so it doesn't matter. Because neither one notices the other. They're too unrefined to notice it. So those kind of things don't create any problem for them. So you have to see what you're dealing with. You know what I'm saying? You have to see what is the particular nature of the man you're involved with and see that it's being kept in line. Because the actual thing is it's controlled by the woman. Right? Does that make some sense? It means there's no question of a man getting his hands on the woman unless the woman allows. If he doesn't allow, it's called rape. But if he does get, and it's not called rape, that means she allowed. So that's just the way it works. Because the words used by Manu, it's not in this section of being in the section on adultery. It just says women will give themselves to the ugly and the. The poor and the ugly. Isn't it poor and ugly? She says, it doesn't matter. You know, just the bottom line is he's a man, right? You know, he's got the proper appendages, so therefore that's enough. You know, that's the bottom line if a woman's falling out of her level of training. Right? So, but if she's sticking within it, then she'll consider, you know, all the religious principles and this and that. But if she falls from that, so it doesn't matter. You know, this idea has to... Manu says, she'll leave a handsome husband who's, you know, taking care of her, plenty of wealth, all facilities for someone else who's not very good looking and, you know, just is a louse. You know, like that. Because one may not be very careful about that. So that's the whole point. Women are trained, so then it comes to the conscious point that that won't happen. Then women are guarded. Like that. The woman's determination that they are going to be protected is their protection. Right? It means the woman's determination that she will be protected is her main protection. That woman, a man can protect. But a woman who's not interested in being protected, no one can protect her. Like that. So that's that aspect is very, very important. So does that make some sense? So it means use your intelligence, just look at who you're dealing with and then figure out what makes it work on a proper emotional, religious, spiritual, progressive way. And those things that you see don't get the right things, adjust them. Does that make some sense? Like that. So that's what you look for. Because the point is the wife, is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, is the fortress for the husband's senses. So she keeps his senses protected by herself dealing properly so they don't get agitated. Right? And by her, you know, just means there's other forms, right? Means women aren't that, you know, happy with just sensual dealings. There has to be emotional dealings. There has to be, you know, something that stimulates their intelligence. It's a whole package that has to be there. So you have to see that that is being dealt with. Right? It can't just function on the sensual platform. You know, so many times in the modern, women will use that as the bait, as the lure to pull in the man. But then they've only pulled in a man who can address her sensuality, not her emotional platform or intellectual platform. So that's why in the Vedas, they don't recommend this because it doesn't, never gives a good result. It's, how can it? If you have somebody who's addressing one third of your needs, what are you going to do about the other two thirds? It just won't function. Does that make some sense? Yeah, so that's the principle. Therefore, then one has to be careful how they're mixed. Does that make some sense? That's the principle. Does that make sense? So you use your brain, and then that's also part of the whole thing, using your intelligence, seeing that the emotional interactions are going on nicely. You know, does that make sense? And then it's there. So you have to watch that. Just don't let the modes take care of it. You should be controlling that. That's therefore self-control. Is that okay? Okay. So here, being patient of hardships, because the point is it's the material world. Material world's always a bad place, so we have to be patient. We can't be frustrated, figure everybody should be taken care of us, this, that. No. It's whatever facility we have, whatever is nice, that's what we got, be patient. Right? Because otherwise, there. Self-control, chaste. Many thousands of Brahmins who were chased from their youth have gone to heaven without continuing their race. Now this is dealing with the principle that sometimes, this is addressing the point that now the woman may say, okay, husband has died, and, how you say? And, you know, we should be chaste and everything, but we don't have a son that can perform the Shraddha rites. Right? So therefore, then through the process of Niyoga, which is banned in Kali Yuga, then a woman could have a child through her brother-in-law. Right. So this is addressing this point, is that that's the husband's duty, not the wife's. He's got to have the son. He died, he didn't have the son, don't worry about it. Therefore, many thousands of Brahmins who are chased from the youth have gone to heaven without continuing their race. Right? It means that Brahmins are just, they were brahmacharis, they didn't get married, they went to the heavenly planets. Right? Generally, you know, they go to specific heavenly planets. You know, the Janatapa Loka, they go to those places. Like that. So, therefore, she doesn't have to bother. Right? Just doing her duty and being faithful, she'll be elevated. So she doesn't have to worry about it. That's what this is for. A virtuous wife who, after death of her husband, constantly remains chaste, reaches heaven, though she has no son, just like those chaste men. But a woman who, from a desire to have offspring, violates her duty towards her deceased husband, brings on herself disgrace in this world and loses her place with her husband. So in other words, if she does that, then whatever was the benefit she would have gotten from that husband, she loses that. Right? Because the woman takes on the gotra of whoever the man she's with. So that's where the line comes down. So if he went back to Godhead, she's chaste, then she'll go back to Godhead. Just because he went. That's all. Just being chaste to him, then just she automatically gets the same result. If she decides, you know, family, this and that, she loses that connection with that man, and now whatever is the man that gave her the child, that's her connection. So then she has to then consider, you know, that principle. Like that, yes. Then means, yeah. No. Yeah. No, it's there. But it's the difficulty is that, I mean, the not the difficulty, is the point of it is that as devotees, then each individual devotee can just chant Hare Krishna, remember Krishna at death, and go back to Godhead. Just the women have an added aspect. Because of dealing the realm of attachment, sometimes they get so involved there by remembering a virtuous husband, then that way they can go back to Godhead. Like that. Even if they don't remember Krishna. You know, the sadhana is not that great, or, you know, like this. but it's not their strong point. But, you know, they're good wives or good mothers or good like this, and they get involved there if they have a good husband. That's therefore you see is those prayers that Prabhupada quotes in the Bhagavatam and that, about that the girls are praying that their husband will be an advanced devotee. Because then they know automatically they will get, they know that the spiritual results the best. But if a girl's too sentimental, it's hard to be focused on that. If she's less sentimental, then she can herself spiritually advance nicely. Or if that sentiment can be transferred to Krishna, then that sentiment then will also be her elevation. So the women have these two ways they can do. The man doesn't. He just has to think of Krishna. You know, if he thinks of the wife, then that's not such a great program. He becomes a very nice, good devotee woman. Like that. No, because he'll be thinking of her from emotional attachment, not from spiritual. See, that's my point, is that the man's material attachment, because his nature is I, or ego, of controller, it doesn't work because it throws it into the realm of enjoyer. As soon as you do that, you lose that intelligent connection. A woman's field is mind, you know, so that attachment. So, therefore, that attachment is then thrown onto something higher, you know, because the highest is on Krishna. So at least Krishna, his devotees, or a husband who's gone back to Godhead, and any of that will get her there. So it's just the aspect of that. But the point is man is independent. Because that's reflected from Krishna. See, now we're dealing down on that third level, that primordial level. Is man is a reflection of Krishna, who is independent. So he is Swarat. He is not connected with the others. He is in his own right on his elevated platform. But the devotee, which is feminine, or energy, they're dependent upon him. Does that make some sense? So that's the principle that you're dealing with here. That's why it comes through in the socially like this. So therefore, that then socially then is affecting that subconscious that we were talking about, that second level. Yes, that's the point. If he's attached, he's not independent. That's why for the woman to get married is generally a step up for her, but for a man it's a step down. I gave this example in Poland. You see the boy, he's looking very nice, bright, and all this. You see the girl, she's there, but you know, a little this way, that way, you know, every day is a little different, like that. They get married, then she's confident there, looks bright and all that, and just look at him. It's gone down. So in other words, he has more, she's taken less, so then she takes and then he goes down. So the girl gets the benefit from there because she's connected herself to Purusha, so that makes her stable. Right? It means when Prakriti connects to Purusha, Prakriti is then stable and confident. But Purusha then has to be Purusha, has to be independent. So therefore, when they are very powerful, then the amount that it drops still keeps them way ahead of the wife. So then they're able to maintain that respect from the wife and make the household life progressive. But if that attachment drops him down to equal or below, then it's that he can't give her much help. You know, it's okay. There's some stability and all that. She can go on nicely, but he doesn't become that person that really inspires her. But the point is to be inspired, so look for that inspiration in a spiritual field. Don't look for it in another mundane relationship with a man. That would be dangerous because that will take the mind out. But you can look for it spiritual, like that. Does that make some sense? So that's where you have to know the difference between the two fields. That the principle is the same, but you have to know how to change its application. Is that the attachment to the man for that emotional and all that input, that you have to keep with the husband. You know, if you're not getting from there, that you can't go to other men for it. You go to other women for it. Find, you know, mature women that you trust, get it from there. You can't get it from another man. But the spiritual inspiration that you would have expected from the husband, you can get from another place. From other women, from other men, like this. That you can take. So the point is to know what you have to get and get it. The ideal is in one way, very nice, qualified, you know, spiritual husband. Then it's there, and then you add on to that your own sadhana, your own other things like that, and then, you know, it's like you got, you know, it's very like guaranteed, you know, success. But if not, you know what you're trying to get, and you look around and you get it, because you know what you need. That's why we make the point is women have to know what is the nature of women to be successful. To ignore it and say we're not like this and all that, you know, that's unprogressive, because then you don't know what you're dealing with. You know, like someone's trying to tell you what a car is, how it works. No, no, you know, I just do it. I like this is all chauvinistic, you know. I'll run the car the way I want. I'll sit in the back seat, you know, look out the back window and go vroom vroom, and then, you know, see how much is happening here, you know. You know, like that. But it's not, there's a nature, and you know it, you get it done. So that's the whole point, is it's a tool, right? You have a karai, you can fry things in it, you know. You have a skillet, it's really hard to fry puris in a skillet. You know, but it's very easy in a karai. So if you know what pots you have, you know what to do with them. That's all that's being said. Okay, we got a woman's body, a woman's pot, so therefore this is what we can do with it. And if we have a pot that looks like a man, then what you can do with that? Does that make some sense? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like this type of attachment may be very strong, but it may not necessarily be a low attachment.
No, it means, but that's because now there you're attached to the devotee. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, is one is comfortable in that environment. That's coming up. I think it starts on the after two pages. It's called Vanaprastasha. Like that. That's where that principle is dealt with. Is that the vanaprastha means is one appreciates what service has been rendered by each other, you know, to help each other progress spiritually. And that means taking care of the sensual, emotional, intellectual, you know, platforms that are there, so that they are being peaceful, then one can progress spiritually. And one appreciates that. So therefore, that's why it says vanaprastha, the man can either go with the wife to the forest or leave her at home if there's a family, and him go out alone, depending upon the situation and like that. So sometimes you see that they'd rather stay at home because the wife, it would be too difficult, and it's comfortable at the home, or, you know, there's people there and there's, you know, things to do, and so they're happy in that situation. Or it may be that they would just rather be with the husband, and because the children are grown up, they can take care of themselves, so she goes with him to the forest. Like that. You know? This is based on the principle that you're saying, is that they have a very good working, devotional, and, you know, material relationship.
Like that.
Yes. Yeah, he remembers it at death, he takes with his own. Yeah, guaranteed. Yeah. Or at least become so detached that he's just not part of the scene. And you'll know that. I mean, that's the thing. Women have a sense that they can tell what is the nature of the attachment. So you can tell if it's still got that attachment because you're a woman, or it's just because you're a devotee. Right? And, you know, just whatever it is, because you have the inherent natures also that works. That's Prabhupada recommends to the Brahmacharya Vaishya that they take sannyas. Right? Because we're dealing with the spiritual thing and spiritual drive and all that. Therefore, it's open to all the dvijas in the Daiva Varnashram system. In the regular Varnashram, it's only open for Brahmins. Only Brahmins take sannyas as an ashram. Anybody can take sannyas by mentality, by giving up the fruitive mentality. That'll come up also. That's after that, then it mentioned. So all these mentalities are for everybody. Even the brahmacharya is trying to cultivate some of the spiritual, the detachment of sannyasi. The women are trying to develop that. The grihastha, the vanaprastha, everybody's trying to develop that. You know? The study habits and all that. It mentions in a verse that the basically, at the end, in the 12th chapter, I think it's 12th or 11th. 11th or 12th chapter, it mentions that the grihastha, following the rules of the brahmachari ashram, then should perform his duties. It means it's not that when he moved to grihastha, the brahmachari duties are given up. But that service attitude, respect for authority, all those things, those remain. Just he adds to it now further duties. Like that. In the vanaprastha, then those same duties are there, it just moves on. If he's not with the wife, then some of those duties don't move. But the same principle of that maturity and giving in charity and all those kind of things remain. You know, sacrifice and all that. And then with sannyas, then many of those are given up. But even at the end of vanaprastha, it also, the second half of vanaprastha, basically looks like sannyas, but they just don't travel and preach. They stay in their place and to those who come, they preach to them. They host them, preach to them, this and that. They don't go, you know, traveling so much like that. That kind of thing. So it will also look the same. The higher level of vanaprastha. They just give up all attachment to the body. That's why it's like very, how are you saying, you know, traditional form. They don't bathe. You know, at one point, they just give up bathing, brushing their teeth, doing anything with their hair, cutting their nails, nothing. Because then it's like you really get to fully appreciate the essence of the material body, you know what it really is, you know. So they get like that. They don't live in a house. It means in the beginning they start off house, they take all their things, they do the yajnas, they do all the whatever they're doing. But slowly, slowly they start giving that up, you know, eating simpler and simpler, more and more austere, like that. Start to spend more time outside in the rain, out in the sun, out in the cold. You know, wears wet garments in the winter, sits in fire and in the sun in summer. It slowly gets to the point where he doesn't need a house, doesn't need anything. He just lives outside under trees. Like that. So that would be the traditional form of it. When it comes to that stage, it's sannyas, but it's not taking that point of where he's going out and preaching. Like that. So the kshatriyas would do that. Vaishyas would stay grihastha, but be brahmachari. Shudras wouldn't, they'd just be grihastha. They'd be unmarried grihasthas and married grihasthas. That would be in the varnashram. But in daiva varnashram, then basically everybody follows brahmacharya, then goes into grihastha, and then it's recommended brahmachariya vaishya that they take sannyas. Otherwise, everybody would then come to that vanaprastha practice. Does that make sense?
On the last class you mentioned the topmost interested is Mandari, the mind, words, and the...
It's an example. She's one of them.
But there are other behaviors that are considered chaste, but they're not the topmost.
The bottom line is fidelity. Is that the woman's not off with another man. That's the bottom line. Then, more than that would be, then be that she's submissive towards the husband. She's taking him as the lead, as authority, though she works together with him. It means if he's intelligent, they work together. Because the principle is if the wife is happy, then everybody's happy, right? Men like to see women happy. Women like to be happy, right? So it works nicely because they feel they can provide, they can take care. It's all part of the male ego, right? I am the protector, like that. So that kind of, it works nicely. So if it's a discussion, there's a good interaction. It works very, very smoothly. If there's no communication, it's difficult. So, but she lets him take the lead. Because the point is in it is the male ego doesn't adjust. You can soften it, you can domesticate it, but if it changes and follows, it loses its masculine principle. Does that make sense? If the man follows the woman, he loses the masculine principle. If he is considerate of the woman, kind towards the woman, caring towards the woman, protective towards the woman, then that is virtuous masculine nature. So there's a difference. So if that's not seen, that doesn't work. You see, many times that's not understood. So women will try to bring it around. They lead it, mistaking it for that's gentleness and domestication and things like that. Does that make some sense? So it's a fine line because you have two mentalities. So the masculine, when it's strong, then the feminine then can manifest. Right? Women can't be women fully except around men who are men. Does that make some sense? Yes, no? It didn't make sense. It didn't make sense. You're dealing with rasa. So rasa means is as you project, the other person then responds. Right? This is called ashray vishay. Means somebody has so many natures, right? Means like yourself. You have so many qualities there are so many emotions you can experience. Right? Yes? No? Okay. So then, depending upon how a person approaches you, it will draw from you that particular one. Right? If they come up to you and they're very pleasant, they'll draw from you pleasantness. They come up to you and they're very in your face, then you'll be very defensive or very aggressive. Right? Does that make some sense? So that's the point. If the man is masculine, it will draw the feminine quality. Feminine doesn't mean sexual. It just means the natural feminine nature. Same time as the woman is trained, that she knows what is feminine, she acts like that, that can draw that from a man. She has to know what it is. He has to know what it is. Otherwise, she will use lower levels of the feminine nature, and then she'll draw from him lower levels of the masculine. So it won't be inspiring to her. Right? Because it should be women, they means that the experience is always considered to try to bring it towards something ideal. So it's kind of a romantic concept that it'll be nice and this and that. So therefore you have to have men that are respectable. Right? Does that make some sense? In some sphere, you know, as husbands, as fathers, as sons, as senior members of the community, you know, which is also fatherly or spiritual leaders or something, way that there has to be something that inspires the woman to that higher principle. Does that make some sense? So, when the one is there, it'll draw the other. Right? Does that make some sense? You know, it's just like it's a typical cliche. You have all these tough ladies sitting around, this, that. And some really together man walks in and suddenly they all go into googly girls. Right? You know? Or the opposite. You have all these tough guys sitting around down at the docks doing this and that. Then some lady comes by and they're all sitting up and trying to look, you know, nice and really pleasant and all this kind of thing. So it's just automatic. That's rasa. So the point is if the nature is virtuous, it'll draw virtue. But if it's not, it won't. So ideally is the man is like that, so then the woman can manifest that. If not, then through her virtue, then she can try to draw that out of the man. If she does, great. If not, she doesn't drop her virtue. She just continues. She'll get benefit. Maybe he won't. Yeah.
I was going to ask a question, but often in Krishna consciousness, we have a conscious
Depends upon what she's like at the home. Because if she out there manages the temple and this, that, what does he care? But if in the home, then she tries to be the temple president, then she might as well go find and marry another woman or something. Like that, because it won't work. That's what Prabhupada says. Lion in the chase, lamb at home. Because the point is it's an emotional thing. What is the taste? The controlling is there, but if the control doesn't get emotion, then what will be the pleasure of it? Therefore, you'll generally even see is that many times you see the ladies will take up those positions, do well in them for some time, and then drop back to something where they're getting more of emotional interaction support, because in those fields it's a little dry. So the tendency, they have the ability, the need is there, someone asks them to do it, they'll do it. I've seen so many, you know, take up, be the head pujari or run a restaurant or do these things. They'll take it up and they'll do it for a while. But many times, as it gets established, they prefer to pull back and let others run it. And then they take care of their own natural, you know, in their family and their own circles of devotional interaction. Well, you hear of men who've been temple president for the last 20 years and, you know, stuff like that. Because it's just, that's what they do. But when they come home, then it should be different. So even if she is the big controller, but when she comes home, she's not. I mean, you look at a queen. Now, a queen, I mean, you probably, you know, at least seen books, if not have gone into some of these palaces in India. They're huge. The cleanliness, orderliness of everything in that, what, you know, what thing is put where, is organized by the queen. You know, certain things, the guards, this, that, that's another thing. But, you know, the places where they're going to sit, host, this, that, she organizes that. She may have hundreds or thousands, maybe even tens of thousands of, you know, maid servants especially, and probably some male servants at her disposal. She's a big manager, you know. But when she's with the king, then she's the wife. And it works. You know, she goes a trip, you know, the only place, this place is only nice and you can have your guests come over and all that because I take care. It won't work. Right? Like that. So that's the whole thing is that it's just being done to help, to please. Because the principles, we're just trying to help and please Krishna. So it's the same principle. All it is you've taken the means either more close is Krishna and the gopis, Krishna like this, or Krishna and the devotees, or down to tattva, energetic energy. And then that comes down into the sphere here. It always has its place. Some are more manifest. Husband, wife is more manifest. You know, Shudras and Dvijas are more manifest. Brahmachari and the teacher, disciple and spiritual master. Those are more manifest. But in some others, then they're less. The principle is still there. They still have to serve. The king is serving his citizens by protecting them. You know, the Brahmin is serving by giving knowledge. So those elements are there, but it becomes more hidden because it still has the element of you have to respect them. Does that make some sense? Mm-hmm. So it's like that. Is that okay? Yeah. That's the whole thing. Means if she has that nature and that, but it's always good is that means we're looking at two situations. There's one is what is actually going on, what you got. And the other is if you have an ability to create that situation. Right? Or help others create it. So, therefore, a woman who's an administrator, better she marries someone who's an administrator. Like that. I've known of, in the past, you know, back in the 70s, 60s, husbands and wife, they're both great managers, and they just go into a place, into a new zone, and just manage it and make it happen. He takes care of the men, she takes care of the women, and makes it all happen. Very dynamic teams. Like that. Very good. So it's best to try to find equal nature. Then you don't have these things that you got to work out. You know, that's why it's recommended. Like that. Also, then it makes the kids a little bit more, how do you say? clear who they are. Otherwise, I know of two kids, the mothers, both mothers at some point, or at least the time when they were conceived, she was the head pujari. And he would do business. And so then, not that he was doing business because it's convenient, but he was a business brain. You know, he was a Vaishya mentality, she was a Brahmin mentality. And then the kids, they're very interested in spiritual things and puja and all that, but at the same time as they got to make money, and they have wanderlust. It's a very common thing. Vaishyas especially have this wanderlust. You know, everybody can have it. Wanderlust means a desire just to go out, see, like that. They just have to go. It means so many people, individuals have, it's not as that, but it's a common thing. They just want to go new, taste, see this, that, so many different things. It's not an uncommon thing. So they work it out is, okay, I buy some things, then I travel around, I go to all the Ratha Yatras. So they're engaged in spiritual activities, that's the nature come from the mother, but they take things and sell things there so that they can make the money to travel and go to all those places. You know, so they kind of work it out, but the problem is that's okay when they're young. How about when they're married? It makes it more difficult. So then they would have to find a woman who is of the same character. Then they'll have the son will be equal. You know, like that. So that's the whole point, is find what matches. But if not, if one knows the principles, then one can make anything work. Like that. You know, it's not ideal, but it'll make it work. So that's why so much this thing of the mixed marriage is looked down upon. Not that the husband and wife won't get along fine. They may, but their kids may have problems. So the whole idea is in marriage, the whole package should be looked at. It's not just how the man and woman will function, but it's how the family will function if they have children. Right. Does that make sense? It has to go beyond that, because that's where the problem comes, in the children. In them it won't be, what does it matter? As long as she knows how to behave properly, she knows how to behave as a proper wife, he knows how to behave as a proper husband, it'll function. You know? But it's just then as a matter of what will be, how the children will come out. So unless she's changed the nature, it's become like the husband, then the child won't have any problem. Like that. I mean, so there's an example given of one of Vishishta's wives. She was, I think, may have been from an outcast or tribal background. But because she was so dedicated, she was so chaste, she took on his qualities. So then she became glorified as a very, you know, elevated Brahmani. Well, much of the time the ladies don't. They're just nice wives and just stay at their nature, and it doesn't matter. But she was trying so much that she came to that level. Like that. So it's making that point. If the wife just follows the husband, then she'll take on that quality. That's why it's mentioned that Anuloma is better than Pratiloma. Because then it's an elevation for the wife. Otherwise you have if it's the Anuloma. Loma means hair. Anu means with the grain. Pratilong means against the grain. So with the grain means a Brahmin man may marry a woman who is of lower. Like that. It's with the grain. Because then the wife, by her chastity, can elevate herself up to that platform. But Pratiloma means then the wife, to be really chaste, has to drop herself down to his platform. Like that. So that's the difficulty. So she maintains her nature, then the kids come out weird. Like a Brahmin woman with a Shudra man, the mentality of their child will be that of a Chandala. They may not be a dog eater, but that'll be their mentality. Otherwise, then she has to drop her nature down to a Shudra, and then you'll get a Shudra. So then that's very difficult, because that higher nature is progressive. You know, it's good. The sadhana, the mode of goodness, it's a progressive nature. So it's not something you want to lose. Right? So that's why it's not recommended, and it goes the opposite. And what's recommended is equal. Yeah, anuloma, A-N-U, loma, L-O-M-A. Anuloma means, anu means less. And prati, I'm not sure what the prati means. But it basically means with the grain, against the grain. Because it says with the grain, because you say Brahma Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra. Against the grain is Shudra Vaishya Brahma, Kshatriya Brahma. You don't say it that way. It's the natural order. So anuloma means it goes down in the order, and pratiloma means it goes up, and it goes opposite. Yeah. So main thing is, you know, is that there's a similar nature, similar spiritual values, similar methods of how you're going to live and all that. And then it works. The point is this similarity. That's what it's trying to get. You know, you can't say, you know, it's similar because, you know, your hand fits into his hand. Okay, that's nice. You know, like that. But it's got to be something a little bit more, how you say, developed than that one. You know, it can't just be a checklist. Okay, lips, check. Hands, check. Okay. You know, like this. It can't be like that. You know, it's got to be something a little bit more. It's got to go into the subtle body. That's what has to be checked. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the principle. So with devotees, as long as that subtle body has the same drive, then that is, then it'll work. Horoscope is one of the main ways to check. Also is by seeing the family. Right? Means the boy's family, how their family behaves, what their values are. You know, it'll be somewhat in its unconscious state, that's what it's going to be. If they've made conscious decision to change that, it'll be changed from that. Yes, by habit. Means you consciously decide to change something, and you stick to it, it will change it. So then the subconscious becomes altered and made elevated. Right? But if you don't deal with it, then when push comes to shove, that's what you're going to deal with. Does that make some sense? So let's say, yeah, then it's just like that. So if someone's made that conscious decision, that's the whole point. It's why consciousness is the most important. If you have consciousness, you can change the whole thing. But if you're not conscious, you can't change anything. It'll just happen the way the modes of nature have arranged it. It won't change. It'll be the same. Does that make sense? So that's another way, is that see the family and the interactions, how they live, what are their values, like that. Then you have, you know, through friends and that, talking to, finding out about them, talk around, find out what's here, what's there, what do others say, what do their friends say. You know, what have others observed? What's the history? You know, so all this has to be looked into. You know, because basically speaking, you know, in so many cases, you can have men and women that like to sit and talk to each other and get intimate with each other, but it doesn't mean that they can live together. You know, that's the thing. If your view is the sphere of, you know, a bed, then, you know, it's a very small area to judge your whole sphere of activities on. You know, even if it's a king size, it's still pretty small. You know, because you have, you know, living rooms, you have kitchens, you have bathrooms, you have a lot of other areas. You know, you have your social life, you have your spiritual life, you have, so that's not addressed on that platform. So that's why is you can get many who can be compatible on that level but can't actually live together. So that's why you have to see bigger. What is their lifestyle? How do they live? What's their history? You know, it may look good now, but check everything else. Is that the way it looked before? You know, what's the history of that looking good like that? You know, is it something new? Is it something real? Is it the background? You know what I'm saying? But look at mainly, it means you can look at the detail, But some of the detail, if the parents aren't devotees, then you can see the principles. Details, of course, change. You know, but many of the principles remain, unless they consciously change those. But if it's devotees and just in the devotee community and you don't have access to families, which is much of the time, then you just have to find out about them. But anyway, girls like to talk about the boys, so then they can talk about it in a progressive way. This is how it's connected. It's not just, you know, check out everybody, talk about everybody. That's useless, because what's the meaning? You know, you see how they were dressed today, or this one said this, or you see them do that. What's the use? It should be what is the guy's nature? You're interested, talk about him. You're not interested, don't talk about him. You want to marry the guy? Talk about him. You don't want to marry the guy? Don't bother. Don't waste the time. And if you do, okay, then find out everything about him. No, so use that nature to advantage, not to disadvantage. So then it's not prajalpa, it's actually, you know, finding out what is the nature, what is the qualification, and if you can buy into that. Does that make sense? So that's the principle. Is that okay? You mean in the marriage that they shouldn't tie the boy's and girl's hand together because they're the body, and the wife won't carry the child in the womb because it's a body? Or, you know what I'm saying? Is you have to consider it, because marriage means you're dealing with a body and you're dealing with a subtle body. You don't have to, it's not so much of a judgment, you just know what you're looking for. And then you see if that's there. You know, if in your family you live simply and you see the other family lives simply, then it's nice. You know, if they don't live simply, it's not that it's good or bad, it's not the right, what you're looking for. You don't have to make a judgment, you just have to see if it's similar. Yeah, but that's just discussing, but it depends. If you consider them to be that body, then it could be said to be offensive. But if you don't consider them to be their body, but that is how their body and gross and subtle body act, you know, it's just like you take, you know, it's a very popular thing, right? Western girl, village Indian boy. Okay, so now, they're so different. Right? Difference in sophistication, difference in dealing, you know, all this and that. So then, the main problem that comes across is that by the background that he's from, he's going to deal, and by the background she's from, she'll deal. She's urban, he's village. She's more sophisticated, he's less. And every chance that, you know, the urban upbringing, then she's not that submissive and she's a little rough. Though sophisticated. That's the fun thing. Westerners will be sophisticated but rough. And the Indians will be, villagers will be unsophisticated but gentle. But if you push the buttons, then they know how to deal with the women. They just get in there and punch the, you know, smithereens out of them. You know? Because that's the way those women are. They're tough as anything. I've seen it myself. I was one day walking into Vrindavan in the Goshala. And there was this man and woman going after each other like, you know, like that. And, you know, I didn't know who they were. And so I'm telling them, hey, you can't fight like this, you know, here, like that. And they just kind of looked at me like, you know, who's this guy? And then, this is in the ISKCON Goshala. And so then I walked by, and then I bumped into a devotee who was from the Goshala. I said, hey, what's going on here? You know, it's like, why this boy is so rough with the girl? I said, it's his wife. You know? And she was, you know, he would push her away and says, you know, something like that. And she'd pick up something, come running back at him to hit him with a stick. So that's the thing. Is so they're like that. So as soon as you make them angry, that's what they do. But the Western girls don't necessarily do that. They might pour a jug of milk over your head or something like that. But generally they don't necessarily get violent unless it really gets wild. So then what happens is the Western girls can't figure out how can they get beat up all the time. So therefore you have to look at what's the inherent nature, because those two won't match. Because they're just, they're opposite. One's sophisticated, one's simple, one's village, one's urban. You know, one is on certain levels rough, and on another levels, you know, gentle. And on the other, it's opposite. But those Bengali women, when they deal, they can deal very gentle and pleasant and serving and all this. But if they get bent out of shape, they can be pretty nasty. You know, like that. You know. So it's, so that's the thing, is you have to see what is the common nature and if it's going to function. Because that's the whole point. Marriage is mundane. But through... It's allowed, but you're not doing it to criticize of that. You're just pointing out as what's the inherent nature of that particular position. And that position doesn't match with this. You know, it's not that you have to criticize the square peg because it doesn't fit in the round hole. It's just that, you know, the square peg goes in a square hole and a round peg goes in a round hole. So you just look what matches. What will match is that they have a basically a similar, like you see, I've seen many successful marriages where you have a urban, you know, I mean, hot, it means, you know, like upper middle class urban Indian from the city, you know, big cities, they can move with the Western girls no problem. You know, like that. Sometimes, you know, they got to do the cooking, but other than that, but it's you know, because the wife doesn't know what their mother knows. So. But other than that, but they can move because there's a similar sophistication. Like that. So if the girl is very submissive, she'll learn that and it'll work. So it's a matter of just seeing what is actually there in the nature that makes them function, and then matching that to someone else, their inherent nature, and how it functions. That's all. So it's not a matter you have to criticize. It's just a matter of being realistic about what goes on, because otherwise you end up with such totally different value systems. You know, and that doesn't always manifest in the beginning. In the beginning, it may not be seen. When the children are there, then it starts to be seen. And when you start to educate the kids, then it really is seen. You know, or when you're just, you know, living simply, then that's all right. But when you need more money, then you start to see differences. Or, you know, when it comes to sadhana, when it comes to all these different things, then you start to see real differences, and that's a problem. You know? Like that. So it's not enough that there's mutual attraction. You know? So it's got to be more than that. Then it'll work. So that's the whole science, is knowing what you're looking for and then seeing if it's there. It's not a complicated thing. I mean, it's complex because you're dealing with human nature, but the principles that you're looking at aren't unascertainable. You know? Because basically, you know, what is this? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I mean, that the whole thing's based on those three things. Right? So then it functions. You know, does that make sense? Is that you're starting from there, and then the details go from that. So you have to be able to fold it back. What is it? There's a particular facility that's required. There's a particular standard at which that facility will be maintained. there will be a particular method on which the intellectual, emotional, and sensual interactions will happen. There will be a natural food. It means there's a natural dress. There's a natural social interaction. You know, no use one is a socialite and the other is a homebody. You know, unless they don't mind. You know, they can accommodate such vast differences, then it works. Okay. But that has to be understood that that's the way it is. It won't naturally just work. It has to be consciously accepted. Because the point is in the house, you just want to relax and you want to move around your house the way you just move around your house. So it shouldn't be that someone else is in the house moving around in the house that's opposed to how you move around the house. Right? You know, if you come and you see the picture's off a little bit, you fix it, and you walk over and the vase, you just move it a little bit to get in the center, or move the flower a little bit. The other guy comes in and drops the stuff on the floor and throws this over here and, you know, this, it's not going to work. Because the natures are too different. If the wife doesn't know how to keep everything nice and he's a slob, they'll be happy together. Right? You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter. So it's either they both have to be sophisticated or both have to be unsophisticated. Or both, you know, don't really, there's something in between. Point is whatever it is, you just have to see. That's why going to the other's house, then you see. That was another point there. You go to their house. You know how your house looks and how you keep it. You go to their house and you see how they keep it. You know, the women walk into the kitchen. Is their kitchen like our kitchen? You know, how the girls dress and behave and move, is it like our girls do? And then you can see the similarity. You see what works and what doesn't. You know, then you can tell. And then it works nicely, because then they'll be comfortable again. The point is husband and wife have to be comfortable, you know, like that. They should be able to be relaxed. It shouldn't be that when you're out of the house, it's tension. When you're in the house, it's tension. No, house is supposed to be where there's no tension. If a spiritual master recommends you get married, you can say no. But then you should not get married. Don't say no and then marry however you like.
If a spiritual master asks you to marry someone and you feel that this person is really not compatible, how is it that the spiritual master asks you to not to do that? Sometimes the spiritual master may suggest someone to someone else.
They can just suggest back. But they don't think, because the point is I would, it means you'd have to see, but I would doubt that they're demanding that you marry this one. They're just suggesting, because from their viewpoint it looks like it may be okay. But they know the disciples on a certain level. But how those disciples deal when they're not in the room with the spiritual master sometimes is very similar. So it is, they do see a good match, but sometimes it's vastly different. And so then others, but one's own observation, others' observation, then you see that there's a difference. And in that case, then you can present that, you know, I don't think it would work for these reasons. It shouldn't just be some sentiment, you know. Like that. It shouldn't, there should be some actual valid reason. That I think the nature of this will come, it won't work with this. You know, so that means one would have to know one's have something to say. You know, it has to be more than just a feeling. Of course, even if it's just a feeling, then express it. You know, because the spiritual master only is suggesting, so it will help in one's spiritual development. If that kind of need and attachment is there, then that may be recommended or suggested or like that. But it's for a progressive spiritual life. It's not just a spiritual master is a, you know, I would say, matchmaker. Does that make sense?
No, why? You know, she went back all the way from going to feels it with me, and it's okay. He's only going to learn somebody else. And if my uncle said no, I realized he would have been allowed to match, because he would have said no to the lesson.
So does that make some sense? Okay. So you have to just see that the you can say something, but at the same time is then the results of that then don't have to be one has to be responsible for. Okay. Something to you. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Srila Prabhupada ki Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki Jayanitai Gaura Premanandi.